Okay, so I want to thank the organizers for organizing, which is always a lot of work, and for the chance to be here. So the title is not meant to make sense yet. The point of the talk is to make sense of the title. Please feel free to stop and ask me questions. In particular, questions of the form, why are you doing that instead of doing this, are always very helpful, I've found. This talk is better because somebody asked a question like that in a previous talk. So I hate people who give numerical talks and just start flashing slides of graphs and you have no idea what they are. So yell at me when I do that and say, what is that? And in particular, a lot of the models are not defined on the slide, so I'll need to draw something on the board to remind you what they are. So I'm going to start with just a short definition. Does anybody know how to make this go full screen? I'm using a borrowed computer. Sorry?
Slideshow.
Do slideshow?
At the bottom.
Yeah, okay. Is that better? I want to think about a bunch of discrete models eventually, but let me start with one particular one, and that's the self-blowing walk. And I'll just quickly remind you what it is. So I'm always working on the square lattice, and I'm going to take all nearest neighbor instep walks in the upper half plane, which start at the origin and they don't visit a site more than once. And then you make them equally likely, put the uniform probability measure on them, and then you first let the number of steps go to infinity, and then you let the lattice spacing go to zero. And in the one case of the half plane, that first limit of n going to infinity has actually been proved to exist in the paper by Balder, Schramm, and Werner. But of course, the existence of the lattice spacing go to zero is not proven. This was supposed to be a picture illustrating that. Unfortunately, the colors are too faint. There are three curves there. You can only see one of them.
I think the problem with the slideshow is it keeps changing the slides.
I discovered yesterday that my laptop won't speak to the projector here, so that's why I'm using a borrowed laptop. And of course, now the colors don't work. So, anyway, so there are three curves there. Only one of them you can really see. But let me go on to the next slide. I tried to. The self-blowing walk has what I'm going to call a natural parameterization, which is what comes from using the length of the discrete model curves. So if I take a walk with, is there a pointer? A physical pointer? Ah, that's fine. That's good. Doesn't have a point. So I take n to infinity. So now I've got walks in the upper half plane that basically run off to infinity. So that's what the W is. So this is on a unit lattice. If I fix a time t, think of t as being order 1, and then multiplied by n after roughly n steps, this will have traveled a distance n to the nu, where nu is 3/4 in this model. So then I scale it back down by a factor of n to the minus nu. So this is exactly what you would do to a regular random walk if you wanted to get Brownian motion out of it. The only difference, of course, is the exponent. Okay, so this will give you a scaling limit, and this is what I'm going to refer to as the natural parameterization. And of course, in that parameterization, the mean squared distance grows like t to the 2 nu with some lattice-dependent constant. So this is a picture of a self-blowing walk. This is a 100,000-step walk broken up into segments of equal number of steps, so 2,500 steps in a segment, and then colored alternately red and blue. And what you're supposed to see when you look at this, I claim, is that the segments are of equal length, whatever that means. So some of them are curled up fairly tightly, like this one down here, but the claim is if you think of these as pieces of string and stretch them out, they'll be the same length. If I now look at SLE is defined or parameterized in terms of the half-plane capacity, and if you do the same thing using capacity, of course, the picture is quite different. So this is an SLE, where the capacity is, I forget if it's 1 or 2, but whatever it is, it's divided into 40 pieces, so each of these pieces has an equal change in capacity. And some of them are quite large. There's a very large one down here. Some of them are very small. There's a little tiny one somewhere up there, for example. Okay. So the point is that capacity doesn't at all correspond to what you might sort of visually think of as being the length of the curve. Okay, so the goal of the talk is to explain this picture. So this is, if you remember, this is the same curve as before. I'll just flash back. So it's that same curve, but colored differently. And I want to explain how I've colored it. So I've parameterized it by something that some people in stochastic processes call p-variation, although I've discovered by asking people that nobody here calls it that. So it's a somewhat obscure term. I'm going to refer to it usually as fractal variation. I have this theory that mathematicians don't know how to name things. They name things in very mundane, boring ways. So instead of calling it p-variation, I'll call this fractal variation. And so what you're supposed to do is look at this picture and see that, again, the segments are of equal length. Okay, some of them are curled up fairly tightly, but the claim is they're of equal whatever length means intuitively. So I have to explain how I colored this thing. Well, no, no, careful. There are two different things being shown here. There are self-moving walks where there's a natural parameterization that comes from the length of the discrete model. This is an SLE, so... No, this is SLE. This is a simulation of... Yes, these are completely different algorithms. This is SLE 8 thirds run, nothing to do with self-moving walks. From Lebner equation, yeah. So... So if I go back to... So if I go back to a lattice model, in the picture where you can't see it, if I'm on a lattice, there's a length, just the number of steps in the walk. And that basically gives a natural parameterization to the curve. That's what I call natural. Okay, and then I scale it in the obvious way. Yeah. Oh, please ask. Say again? Oh, nothing, just an artifact of the plotting program. Yeah, I mean, this would run for... In some of these I put a box around it, and some of them I remember to take it off. But. So this is now not a self-moving walk simulation. This is actually running the Lebner equation, and I've got some way to reparameterize this curve so that when you color it with equal segments of parameterization, it looks like what I was doing with the self-moving walk. But it's a completely different simulation, Michelle.
If you take a discrete set of any walk, you wouldn't be able to define the p variation and compute it and draw it. That's something you can only do with the continuum walk.
No, you can do it, and I will do it.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you can do it as long as you don't get down to too small a scale and see that you're on a lattice.
Yeah. Does that sound funny?
It is. It just doesn't look like it. If you graph a self-moving walk with a lot of steps, it looks like it intersects itself until you really zoom down and check that your program is actually working right. It comes so close that it seems to hit. But if I were to zoom in on this, which I can't.
Maybe go this p parameterization.
Oh, I haven't told you yet. That's the next slide. This is the warm up slide to get you interested.
Okay.
No, the length, the length, strictly speaking, is infinite for these curves, of course. Yeah.
Well,
I haven't explained it yet. I want to tell you how I got this image. That's what. Chuck, did you have a question?
No.
Okay. First a little bit of motivation. Maybe I don't need motivation. So the self-moving walk is supposed to be SLE 8 thirds. Now, what exactly does that mean? Well, one way to interpret it is to simply say if you don't care about the parameterization, then the probability measure that SLE puts on curves is the same as the probability measure that the self-moving walk puts on curves. So, for example, if I ask how close does the curve come to some point in the plane, look at the distribution of that random variable, it would be the same in the two models, in the scaling limit of the self-moving walk and the SLE. Now, you might want to argue that these models are actually the same as measures on parameterized curves. So one thing you could do, well, first of all, the obviously wrong thing is if you use the natural parameterization for the self-moving walk and the capacity parameterization for SLE, those are obviously not the same. One thing you can do is you can parameterize the self-moving walk by capacity, and then those parameterized curves should be the same as SLE with its usual capacity parameterization. And I've done simulations to check that, but that's not what I want to talk about. To me, that's a sort of bizarre thing to do, because I guess it's a sign of my training, I find capacity a strange way to parameterize things. But so our goal is to find a way to reparameterize the SLE so that it agrees with the natural parameterization of the self-pointing walk. Okay, so what is it? So this is the definition of the so-called p-variation or the fractal variation. This is the first definition, not the one I'm going to use. So I take a time interval and I take a partition of it, so divide it up into little segments of time, gamma is the random curve, be it the self-volume walk, SLE, whatever you're looking at. And you look at the increment. So the superscript here is I'm going to take a sequence of these partitions. So I take the increments, take their lengths. Now, this should be of order the time difference raised to the nu. Okay? Because that's essentially the definition of nu, the distance the curve travels in. If I was doing the self-volume walk, this should be of order the time difference raised to the nu. Okay, so I'm going to take this and then raise it to the 1 over nu. So this should be of order the time difference, and then I'm going to sum over it. And then I'm going to try and take a limit where the mesh, so to speak, the size of the partition gets finer and finer. If I was doing this with Brownian motion, just a graph of Brownian motion, and did nu equals 1/2, this is the so-called quadratic variation. There are beautiful theorems that say that under suitable conditions on how this partition goes to 0, so to speak, this exists and is in fact non-random and proportional to t for Brownian motion. And I've forgotten exactly what the hypotheses are, but different hypotheses give you different types of convergence. But this is a random variable after all, because it depends on the curve. So the Brownian motion theorem say that in the limit it's not random.
How is the sequence of t's, this partition, chosen?
I haven't said yet, and I'm not going to say because I'm going to abandon this definition. But that's a subtle point. The first thing you shouldn't like about this definition is that t is in here at all, because I'm going to define a parameterization, but I'm going to use some other parameterization to define it. So for example, if I'm doing SLE, I might take t to be the capacity, and then I'm using the capacity to compute this fractal variation. And what I have to worry about is that if I use a different parameterization of the curve, do I get the same thing? And the claim is no. For example, if you took the self-avoiding walk and you parameterized it by capacity and computed this quantity, in the limit you won't get the same thing as if you take the self-avoiding walk with its so-called natural parameterization and compute this. Okay, if the two parameterizations are smooth with respect to each other, of course you'll get the same thing if one is a differentiable function of the other. But capacity is not a smooth function of natural parameterization and vice versa. So this could give you different things.
But doesn't it depend on how you choose your...
Well, I'm sorry. But when I make this statement, I'm thinking of taking a uniform partition in both cases. Do a uniform partition by capacity, and then do a uniform partition by natural parameterization.
Yeah.
Get the same limit here. Yes. I mean, for example, for Brownian motion, if you want to be malicious, you can choose sequences of partitions where the choice depends on the choice of Brownian motion path and sort of get whatever you want out of this. But
if you don't correlate the way you choose the t's with the one of motion itself, it didn't say enough that the mesh goes to zero and then it works.
There's some conditions. I forget.
I mean, it depends what kind of conversion you want to
have. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but you could choose a sequence of partitions such that the first step was t over 2, and the next step was t over 4, and
yeah.
T over 8.
No, but the mesh has to go to 0.
Really, it's not.
What? The mesh has to go to 0.
Well, then there are other ways of doing that.
Yes. Like I say, if you want to be malicious, you can...
Be non-uniform.
Yeah. But my goal is to... I don't want to use
this definition. Whatever you do, if the mesh goes to 0, the
But that's using what I would call the natural parameterization of Brownian motion. If I were to then go and do some bizarre random time change to the Brownian motion, I could get nonsense doing this. Okay.
Yes, yeah. Would you refer to Thicketer principle?
Because I don't know what it is.
it's very related, but I don't complete.
Okay, good. So forget that. What I want to do is the following. And this is motivated by some questions that people like Yuval Perez and Wendelin Werner and Greg Lawler asked me in a previous talk. So instead, let's do the following. Let's fix a small spatial distance delta x. And let's go along the curve. Yeah? Yeah.
So why was it called p? P was supposed to be integer.
Oh, well, p was one over nu. Yeah.
Was integer in some other applications or not?
I don't think so. It was just the letter they chose. I mean, like I said, mathematicians don't know how to name things, so they. Yeah, I think one of the cases they studied it was looking at stable processes and that YP. I don't know. Yeah, but I mean, it's completely uninspired in my opinion. Okay, so instead, let's fix a small distance, and now I'll go along the curve. I'll define the TIs inductively. So, having defined them up to TI minus 1, TI will be the go along the curve until the distance you've traveled is first equal to delta x. Okay. Now, this doesn't depend upon the parameterization. If I change the parameterization, well, the times will change, but the points, so to speak, on the curves where this is happening won't. And then I'll simply compute the sums of these increments raised to the 1 over nu. Okay. Now, the number of time steps I have to do until I reach, you know, some given point on the curve will be random. It'll be, so the n here is random. Okay, so I'm choosing, in a sense, I'm choosing my partition based on the curve here, but the parameterization now doesn't matter. This is almost like computing the, which measure? The Hausdorff link or something. It's not exactly, but it's almost the same as asking how many discs of radius delta x does it take to cover the curve, but it's not exactly the same as that. But morally, it's the same. Okay, so does this definition make sense? Because this is the one I'm going to use. And then, of course, I didn't write it down here, but then I'm going to take a limit. I'm going to let delta x go to 0 and hope that this converges to something.
Will the experts tell us whether this is the house relates to the Hausdorff measure or the Minkowski? I can't remember. I mean, isn't this the Minkowski one where you cover it with balls of the...
It's not.
It must be bound in one side.
Yeah, I mean, it's not literally the same, but if it's different, I'm surprised. I mean, I would expect it to just be a constant time set. But.
Well, if I remember correctly, what Grant said last week, the difference is that in one case you cover it strictly by the balls of radius epsilon.
Yeah.
In the other case, it's not bigger than epsilon.
That's the Minkowski, isn't it? Okay.
The Hausdorff is less or equal to, the Minkowski is equal to, I think. But that may be wrong.
I guess we've run out of experts.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so the conjecture is that for various discrete models, and the four that I'll show simulations of are the loop erase random walk, the self-winding walk, easing spin interfaces, and percolation exploration, that this, again, this is a random variable, but the claim is that in the limit of delta x going to 0, it's non-random and proportional to the natural parameterization of the discrete model. Okay, that's the claim. So there's sort of two claims here, I guess. One is that this limit, three claims. This limit exists, it's non-random, and it's proportional to the natural parameterization.
I thought you wanted to get rid of this natural.
No, I want to... My goal is to figure out how to parameterize the SLE. So the sequence of steps is going to be, I'm going to argue that in the discrete models, this is a way to recover the natural parameterization by using what's really only a geometric property of the curve. Okay, so without knowing the natural parameterization of the curve, this is a way to recover it, so to speak. And then what I'll do in the sort of second part of the talk is look at SLE and compute this quantity for the SLE curves. Okay, but for the moment, I want to convince you that it's the right way to find the natural parameterization in the discrete model without using the underlying lattice, so to speak.
Omega is the same as gamma in the last line?
Yes, sorry. Yes, gamma is an omega, sorry. Anytime you see an omega and a gamma, they're the same. Yes, yes. So, the variance of n won't be small, but the variance of this will go to 0. Right? I mean, n is growing as delta x goes to 0, but this quantity is converging to something non-random. So the variance of this is going to 0.
So suppose you didn't know what mu was, what would happen?
Well, I expect this would either run off to infinity or zero, depending upon which side of nu you were. Because this is a very small number. You're raising it to a power bigger than one. And if you get that power wrong, you're either going to be way too big or way too small.
From non-critical curve?
Well, a non-critical curve is going to have a length, isn't it?
Well, I know, but I think it's a different length.
Different length.
So it's going to be fractal on
short distance.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's also going to have a length, but that's probably going to be a different length.
I don't know.
Than this.
I mean, it's just going to have a Euclidean length.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, pick it a number, a numbers which maximize the sum. Give it a maximum force.
Maximizing it as a function of.
Choosing
the t's.
Which you take some finite points,
right.
Finite number of points on the curve, maximize that. That would be pick it a numbers.
Okay.
And pick it a theory says that having these numbers, you may construct an object which will be a capacity where the number of these numbers goes to it. That's a good bit.
Okay.
There's more than any number of dimensions? I thought it was 20.
It's
just a question of presentation, but you could even forget completely about the source of criteria and so on. You could just talk about points on the curve that you call gamma.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, maybe that would be better to emphasize that there's no
Those points, those which maximize the sum,
Okay, well, I've already said this. So the key point here is that this random variable is not random. So in some sense, what's at work here is a law of large numbers. That if these things were, strictly speaking, independent, identically distributed, then this would just essentially be a law of large numbers. Now, they're not exactly independent, but I think that really what's going on here is that in some sense they're asymptotically independent, and that's what's making this happen. Okay, so I want to... can't see the curves. So let me explain what this is a simulation of. And then I'll try and wave my hands at the curves here. So this is the loop erase random walk. Now, which loop erase random walk? So what this actually is I take what's called the half-plane excursion. So I take a random walk in the upper half-plane, starting at the origin, but conditioned to stay in the upper half-plane. Now, that's a very nice model because there's a very simple formula. You don't have to actually do that conditioning. There's a simple formula for what the transition probability should be for the steps. It reduces to the gambler's ruin. So it's very easy to simulate that thing. Unlike the random walk, it's not recurrent, it's transient. It runs off to infinity. So it will revisit sites, but only a finite number of times. So you can loop erase that infinite walk, that makes sense, and get a walk in the upper half plane that goes from the origin to infinity. So that's the discrete model. And then I compute this fractal variation using the new for the loop erase random walk, which is what, 4/5, I guess? So this, now all the plots are going to be plots of the cumulative distribution function. So this is, I've got a random variable, namely the this is my random variable, and I'm going to plot its cumulative distribution, meaning I'm going to plot the probability is less than or equal to some cutoff as a function of the cutoff. So of course you always get a curve that goes from 0 to 1. If you had something that was non-random, the cumulative distribution would just be a step function. It would be 0 until it hit the value of the non-random random variable, and then it would jump to 1. So if I plot the cumulative distribution for smaller and smaller delta x's, if this is true, then I should see these functions converging to a step function. So they should be getting steeper and steeper, so to speak. And if you could see the colors, that's what you would see. So there are about 4 curves here. You can only see... I don't know, can you see any of them? Beginnings. You can see the starts down here. Okay, so this is, I should have said at the start, this is all work in progress. So a lot of the slides are just gee whiz slides. They're just meant to sort of make it look like what I'm saying is right. The first slide here, I've included 0. let me zoom in on this. So this is just to make it clear that what the scale is. So now I'll zoom in so that it's only going from 0.8 to 1. If you could see it, you'd see that these curves were all crossing at a common point here, and you'd see that they were getting steeper and steeper. You can collapse them, yes. And you can also plot the variance of these as a function of delta x and see that it falls on a line in exactly the same way it would if they were strictly independent. Okay. Instead of giving delta x, I've given something here I've called delta t. Delta x is just delta t raised to the nu. That's just the way I chose to parameterize the small parameter in the simulations. Yes, yes.
So is there any initial way of extracting it from simulation if you don't know what...
Well, my guess would be if you did the wrong... I mean, this was John's question, basically. If you did the wrong nu, these things would probably be running off to infinity or zero. So if you plotted the means and then tried to find the value of nu, which made the means converge to a finite number, that would presumably be a way to get the nu. Yeah, it's nice to know the answer. Yeah. That I didn't look at. Good question. I would be amazed if they're not Gaussian. Okay, and now I should be a little careful in doing this. If I take delta x to be really small, these values of delta x correspond to segments of the curve where there's still a fairly large number of steps in the discrete model. As delta x gets smaller and smaller, eventually I'm going to get a small number of discrete steps. And if I take it really small, I'll just be getting one discrete step per increment in that computation. And if I go to that extreme, then these things should be deterministic and just equal to 1, the way I've rescaled them. So just to see that going on, if I do some smaller delta t's, you may not be able to see it, but the first 4 or 5 are collapsing nicely, and then they start marching over on their way over here to 1. Okay, so that's just to convince you that I'm thinking what you expect. Okay. Second model. Self-avoiding walk. So I've already said what the self-avoiding walk is. These are self-avoiding walks in the upper half plane, a million steps simulated with the pivot algorithm. This is probably the simulation that works the best. You can simulate very long self-avoiding walks. Again, you can't really see the curves, but they're all passing through a common point here. And again, you have to watch the scale. This is 1, this is 0.9, 0 is somewhere over at the edge of the board by the pivot algorithm. So the pivot algorithm is a Markov chain Monte Carlo algorithm where you take a walk and you randomly pick a point on the walk and you randomly pick a Euclidean lattice symmetry, either a flip or a rotation by 90 degrees, and you try and do that symmetry to the piece of the walk after the point you've picked. If the walk you get is still self-avoiding, you accept it. If not, you reject it. Most of the time you reject, and if you implement this carefully, you can get it to go quite fast in 2 dimensions.
So the crossing point is this value of this variance actually is lattice dependent, or?
Yes. Yeah. So I mean, the conjecture was that this converges to a constant times the natural parameterization. So there's a constant in there that depends on the lattice you're using. Yeah. Which you'll just have to estimate from the simulations. There's no way to. You know, it's sort of like a diffusion constant in some sense. Third model, the Ising model. So what am I doing in the Ising model? I'm taking a rectangle with the... I'm scared to call them Dibruchian boundary conditions after last week, but the way I was raised. With boundary conditions like this that force an interface into it. And then what I'm actually doing is looking at this interface and looking at it up to some natural time, which is well before the time it hits over here, roughly about a third of the way before it hits there. Of course, the natural time it takes to go from here to here is random in this model. But I choose a natural time that sort of keeps it from hitting up here, and then I do the same computation, compute the fractal variation of that curve for different delta x's. So here the first 3 are collapsing nicely. The fourth one is already starting to march over to the deterministic value. In this case, the extreme value if delta t was too small was, I think, 0.6, just because of how I shows the stopping point here. This is much smaller. It's a box that's 1200 by 400. So these are much smaller curves than for the Eisen model of the loop race random walk. I mean, this is a real two-dimensional simulation. The other ones are essentially one-dimensional. So this sort of works, but I've got a longer simulation running of this, but so far it's refused to give me any data. It's just busily running. And then finally, percolation. You can generate really long... Well, let me say what the model is. So again, it's in the upper half plane. It's the usual exploration process where you color the hexagons on half of it blue, color the other half yellow, and then in the bulk, you randomly make the hexagons blue or yellow, and then find the interface that starts from that defect in the boundary, runs up to... it runs off to infinity, so to speak. This is doing that, and that's very fast. And this is doing that for 4 million steps, again, computing the same thing. Percolation is really rough. I mean, these curves really wind around a lot. So you've got to get a pretty large number. People always mislead you when they draw percolation interfaces. They're not the way they're drawn. So you've got to keep a pretty large number of steps in the discrete model in one of these delta x instruments before, if you don't want to see the lattice effects. So this guy will start marching off away from the sort of collapsing point fairly soon, even though it's a large number of steps. Okay, so... Okay, so now I'm going to change gears, but maybe I should pause. Are there questions about... So those are the simulations of the discrete model. And now I want to return to SLE. Oh, yeah.
The way you collapse the curves would use the value of mu as well, right?
The variance of those curves depends on delta. Well, depends on whether you're doing it as a function of delta x or delta t, I guess. So I guess the answer to your question is yes. I mean, if I plotted the variance as a function of the delta x, that would be another way to pick out the new, I guess. Yeah. I'm going to assign that as a homework problem at the end. As far as I know, no, but I think that's a problem that's quite right, because it should be very similar to the proof of the fractal dimension. So anybody who's mastered those techniques is invited to jump on it. Okay, so back to SLE. So, I think I've said what's in this slide already. But let me remind you. So now three of these four things are actually theorems. The only one that's not proven yet is that self-blowing walk is SLE 8/3. These are certainly statements where they're theorems that the curves without parameterization are the same. If you look at what's actually proved, what's usually proved is that if you parameterize the discrete model by capacity, that's the same as the SLE. Now, if what I've said before is right, then these correspondences should also be true if I parameterize the discrete model by the natural parameterization, the parameterization coming from the length, and use the fractal of variation to parameterize the SLE. So now what I want to do is test that. Okay, so now I have to, unfortunately, simulate SLE as well as the discrete models. Okay, so I'm going to do two very different simulations, and in the SLE, I'll generate an SLE curve, and I'll compute fractal variation along it. Okay, but I should say a little bit about how to simulate SLE. Let me just say a little bit. It's easy to spend a lot of time on this. So I'm going to discretize time, but not space. So I'm going to divide time up into some small intervals. I'm going to imagine sampling the Brownian motion at those times. So the green curve is a Brownian motion. The blue dots, I've sampled the Brownian motion. Here I've taken a uniform partition, which I'll argue in a second is a bad thing to do. And then in between, I'll approximate the Brownian motion by a driving function for which the Lovering equation has an explicit solution. One of the simplest things to do is just take square root of t or shifted square root of t. That's the driving function that corresponds to the curve that's just a tilted slit, where the angle of the slit depends on this constant here. And c can be positive or negative. Okay. So now for the driving function in red, you can explicitly solve Lovener. It just basically comes down to composing the conformal maps that correspond to each of these segments. Yep.
converted from convex.
Straight lines meaning, you mean between the blue dots?
Yeah.
Well, for a linear function, you don't know how to solve Lebner. At least I don't. The solution to Lebner with a linear driving function, that's not known, is it?
No, it is not. It's just the KD function. I mean, it's the solution.
Okay, well.
But is it not that easy to invert and to...
Yeah. So,
x to the x is equal to y,
essentially. Okay. But, I mean, for this, it's the tilted slit, and it just comes down to some fractional powers. The conformal map is quite simple. That you can do that, and then you're basically doing driving functions, the solution of vertical slits. But
this will eventually be branching.
No, it'll have branching, but presumably it'll give the same scaling limit. Yeah. I mean, the branching is on a very small scale. Yes. I knew I was going to regret talking about simulating. Yes.
This is an extension of Hastings-Levitt algorithm to make assembly.
Yes.
To make the mains or make assembly. Is it similar? I mean,
Yes, I think it's the same thing. I mean, this is sort of. I mean, I remember years ago David had a computer program he was carrying around that did this. Yes. What? Okay, but using this anyway. So now if you want to do this and you want to compute points along the SLE curve, you just have to apply these explicit conformal maps. Depending upon how you think of your SLE, put the driving function in here if you like. I always think of SLE as mapping the tip back to the origin. Okay, if you do a uniform time discretization, here's an example with 20,000 steps and kappa equals 6, the pictures don't look very good. In particular, down here, it's doing horrible. This is basically one time step. So this is going back to the first part of the talk, that capacity does not at all correspond to length along the curve. So down here, a sort of large spatial change corresponds to a very small change in capacity. So you're sort of not refining time enough down here. So what you should do is you should instead choose a non-uniform partition of the time interval, and you should in fact choose it depending upon the Brownian motion sample. So what's actually done here is you first do a uniform time partition, and then you look at steps along the SLE where the step is too big, so to speak. And there you refine the time partition. Now you have to be careful so you don't bias how you're sampling your Brownian motion. So you keep all the points where you've sampled the Brownian motion, and then in between you fill it in some more using a Brownian bridge. I mean, that's a pretentious way to say you do the right thing. Okay. And now this is roughly the same number of time steps. It's not exactly 20,000 as the other one, but you should be careful. This picture takes about 10 times longer to generate because you're throwing away a lot of calculation. You sort of compute this curve over some time interval, see that you need to refine it more, and so even though it's the same number of steps, it's not the same amount of CPU time here. But this one, you're supposed to say, oh, that looks much better. That looks like percolation.
Does the limit exist? I mean, you could take this original curve and then you do this Brownian bridge and then you...
This is a question. If you take the Brownian motion and approximate it in some way, does the resulting Lebner chain converge to SLE? And certainly in some sense it does. I'm not enough of an expert to say exactly in what sense, but... I don't know. Does anybody want to answer?
So there's a paper by Robert Bauer.
Yes.
On discretizations. He proved some convergence.
But it's convergence really given in terms of the conformal map rather than the curve. It essentially amounts to a statement that if you look at the inverse conformal map and you stay away from the real axis by a small amount, you get uniform convergence of the conformal map on that thing. At least in some sense, it converges now. I'm running out of time. Let me say this real quick. if I want to compute n points on the SLE, each point k will be roughly of order n. So each point will take a time of order n, so it'll take time of order n squared to compute n points on the SLE. My claim is there's a trick that allows you to do this at a time that rather is order n squared is order n to the p, where p empirically seems to be about 1.4. And there's similar, a trick similar to this was in the Hastings-Levitov paper, I think. So the idea is to group these functions into blocks where b is large but small compared to n. And for each of these blocks of functions, you approximate this function, which is basically a fractional, involves fractional powers, approximated by a Lorentz series about infinity. So you're putting in a tiny slit to a Lorentz series about infinity. Within the block, compose the Lorentz series, work out the Lorentz series of the composition. And then, and you do that independent of the, you know, the k you're going to use. Okay, and then use that in this computation when you can. So as you go through this computation, if your point is away from the slits you're sticking in, so to speak, you can get away with using this Lorentz series approximation to the block rather than the block. That's very sketchy, but it speeds it up a lot. If you're a fan of the Zipper algorithm, this way of simulating SLE is in some sense the reverse of the Zipper algorithm. In fact, you should call the Zipper algorithm the unzipper algorithm, and then this is the zipper. But the comment is that the same trick that speeds this up can be used to speed the Zipper algorithm up. So if you want to compute the capacity of a curve, the driving function of a curve, you can do it much faster this way than the sort of naive way. Anyway, back to the SLE versus discrete. So remember, my goal is to show that if you look at SLE parameterized by fractal variation, it's the same as the discrete model parameterized in the natural way. And for these three models, for the loop erase random walk, the self-Twain walk percolation, I'm going to look at the following random variable. I'm going to take a semicircle of a fixed radius, and I'm going to watch the curve until it first hits that semicircle, so that's the dot here. I'm going to compute the fractal variation of that piece of the curve. I'm going to divide it by 2, and then follow the curve until I reach that fractal variation. So in other words, this is the midpoint of the curve, where midpoint is in terms of length, where length now means fractal variation. Okay. And I'm going to do this for both the discrete model and the SLE, and look at the random variable that's the district, that's the x and y coordinates of this point, so two random variables, and compare those for the two models. Okay. Is it clear what? Because now I'm going to start throwing the graphs at you. So before I do that, is it clear what I'm? Yes. So in the discrete model, I just see how many lattice steps this takes, divide by 2, and go that far along the curve. Yeah. I mean, I could compute the fractal variation in the discrete model and do that, but I don't. Okay. So the first is loop erase random walk versus SLE2. Three curves are shown here. One you can't see because the color is too light. There's a green curve, which the other two you don't see because they're sitting on top of each other. So there's a red and a blue curve. I can't see these colors at all. The red curve is the loop erase random walk, and the blue curve is the SLE2. And they're basically sitting on top of each other, forming this purple curve here. The green curve is SLE2, where I find the midpoint using capacity instead of the fractal variation. So I just compute the capacity up till the circle, look at half of that. Okay, so that's a dumb thing to do, but I just want to check that it is a dumb thing to do. Okay, so it gives you a different curve. So again, these are gee whiz pictures. I've got plots of the difference of these curves if you want to see them. They're not terribly enlightening. The difference there in this one, I think, is on the order of 0.5% or something. So this is the x coordinate. This is the y coordinate. Now the green curve, which you can't see, is quite a bit different somewhere. I can only see a piece down there. Maybe you see it better from back there. Self-Twain walk versus SLE 8/3. Again, exactly the same random variables, but now I'm doing a self-Twain walk simulation, SLE simulation with a different kappa. And now there's only two curves. I've quit drawing the green curves. So, and again, they're collapsing. You can't distinguish them there. X-coordinate, y-coordinate, sitting on top of each other. Easing model. This one works much better than it has any right to for the for the size of the systems, I didn't expect it to agree this well, but it agrees basically as well as the other ones. They're sitting on top of each other, you can't really difference X and Y. All right, that's getting boring. Luckily, the percolation one doesn't work so well, so it'll wake us back up. So this is percolation versus SLE 6. Now, in my experience, it's much harder to simulate SLE the way I'm doing it for kappa, you know, equals 6 than 3. It's a much nastier process in some sense. So this is agreeing extremely well. The Y one is not. Luckily, you can't see the other curve. So the blue curve is sitting down here a couple, 2 or 3% well below that curve. I don't understand this. I think it's a simulation problem that somehow, you know, the SLE, when it gets near the real axis, is not happy and the simulation is not working well. But this needs more work to understand it. Yeah?
The previous curve has a strange shape.
It has a funny change in concavity, yes.
Yes, and okay, that's not enough.
Well, they both do it.
It's not the screen that is a little bit...
No, it looks that way on the laptop too, yes. It sort of looks like a straight line, but it's actually a change in concavity. And like I said, they're both doing it, so...
Yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I guess I don't understand what the axis...
I'm committing the usual sin of not telling you what the axes are. So I've got a random variable, which is the x-coordinate of this midpoint on the curve. Right? The midpoint on the curve is random. I'm looking at its x-coordinate. That's a random variable.
What's the endpoint? What's the midpoint? Sorry, I thought this was in the half plane.
Yes.
So the total.
Oh no! But I run it until it hits a semicircle, a fixed semicircle of radius.
Okay.
Doesn't matter.
Right.
And then I look at the midpoint of that. Yeah. So it stopped halfway to the semicircle, where halfway is in terms of fractal variation. And this is the distribution function of the random variable x. So if you take the derivative of this curve, you'd see the density function.
So it's much more likely to be on the.
It's essentially uniformly distributed over this interval, is what this graph is saying. Well, this is the CDF.
And
the integral. See, I mean, when you run a simulation, this is what you actually compute. Now, I could do a numerical derivative of this, but then you introduce you have to decide what scale to numerically differentiate at, and I've just gotten into the habit of just looking at the cumulative. Sorry. So, I mean, that's why all these curves are increasing.
So yeah. If you did this calculation for SLE6, if someone were to do this, you would expect to be uniform?
Not exactly. I don't think this is not a straight line, in my opinion.
Oh, you think that waviness
is really there?
I don't know if that's the screen or the projector.
No, that was Michelle's comment. No, I think that's a real thing, because it's the same waviness in both the SLE simulation and the percolation simulation. So either the numerical errors are behaving the same way, or yeah. Yep. Sure. That would be a test, but that's a test that has nothing to do with the parameterization.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a test you can do. Yeah, I mean, I did tests like that comparing self-weighing walk and SLE.
Just to understand, why do you do this, you know, this half? I mean, you're trying to test them.
Because I'm lazy.
It's not the same.
Because I'm...
And why don't you test them? Yeah, okay.
Well, another way to do the test would be simply run along the curve for a fixed amount of natural time, and then run along the SLE for a fixed amount of fractal variation. If I want to compare those, I need to know the constant in between the natural parameterization and the fractal variation. So I'd have to first estimate that constant to make the comparison. Here I have the advantage that the constant is sort of, because I'm just looking at this midpoint, I don't need to know the constant. So it's purely a convenience. I don't want to call it a cheat, but it saves having to figure out that constant. And, okay, so let me end. So we've had these arguments over whether things are predictions, conjectures, conclusions. I'm going to say they're homework problems.
I thought this was posed as a problem by Greg Waller
last week or at the end of the discussion session, right? To find eventual length.
Well, I had to leave before. Yes, that's one of Greg's favorites. Well, he's seen this answer, so if he didn't give you this answer, then he doesn't like it. Well, I mean, you need to prove that it has. I mean, I've seen Greg say this before, so I assume he lists several properties you want this length to have, and so one of the things would be to prove that the fractal variation has those properties. All right. So the first problem is, in discrete models, can you prove that this fractal variation exists and is proportional to this natural parameterization? Now, this is probably very hard because, after all, you don't. Well, I don't know. This is probably very hard, but. But again, it should be some sort of law of large numbers type argument. Well, this is just repeating that the Monte Carlo simulations seem to support this to varying degrees depending upon the model. This is a question we raised before. Can you prove the fractal variation exists by using these ideas that Vincent used to prove the dimension is what it is? My guess would be this is the most accessible of the problems here. And then finally, the last conclusion is that if you use the fractal variation to parameterize the SLE, then it agrees with the parameterized curve. Now, presumably, if you had a case where it was known that the model converged to SLE, like Luperius random walk in SLE2, and you could show these other things, then this should follow. But okay, so that's the end. I think capacity and this natural parameterization are very singular with respect to each other. I mean, I've had discussions with Greg about this, and I mean, yes, there is a random time change, but is there any nice way to get it? Another way to ask the question is, there a way to set up the Lubner equation so it directly gives you this parameterization? I think that's John.
At least in the case of Capricorn's 8/3, then if the top conjecture is true, that tells you how to go away from the critical point, because you just weight them by the natural parameterization in a certain way. You just have a single curve, and
yes,
on the lattice, what you do is that you weight them by a parameter x to the length,
right.
Which is the natural length, and the way you go away from the critical point is that you change x.
Right.
So in the SLE case,
in
SLE 8/3 case, if you weighted them by this fractal variation.
So you want to make SLE non-critical.
Right. That would make a non.
Why just for 8/3?
Well, because you need to weight all the other loops as well.
Because in that model, it's just a function of the natural length.
Well, what I mean is that in the Ising model or something, it's being weighted by all the other loops which are around, and you have to change the x on those as well.
Right. Whereas here you just have the one curve.
Yeah.
If I may make a short comment, maybe.
Yeah. Sure.
Just a short. I'm not sure if it's related to the anyway, it's a text from textbook. It's called the Hector series.
Right to the.
Yeah, I think they can only see.
It's conveyed in the. I know this for closed domains, but you do Google for things as well. I'm almost sure, but in the textbook, here, could you have a closed domain, simple connected, and put a simple curve. So you choose points here, 10 points. The problem is the device. consider sum of the logarithm of the I minus j. Then maximize, find the maximum for, choose the position of this curve of this point such that the sum that would be capacity for conformal relations. The radius of the domain under the limit of the framework. And the conformal map of this thing to a unit disk can be constructed directly out of so-called ticket polynomial. There's a pretty much direct conception, but I do remember the formula for conformal maps, which is capacity.
You mean these polynomials converge to the conformal map?
No, it's a bit more complicated, but I do remember the formula for capacity. So you have to maximize it, and the value is a conformal map of capacity. And that's all in the textbook, it's considered a way how to discretize conformal map. You consider finite dimensional objects in this problem, which they nicely converge to that.
Suppose that equals zero case of that variation because it's a log.
Yes, it is deterministic.
No, it's equals zero now, right? It's limit. So the power you have a log.
Yeah, we can write the conformal radius is a log. Actually divided by rho n squared. It may not be.
That's one of the electrostatic
problems. Yeah. So I guess it's a good point to break for 5 minutes. So let's reconvene. My watch actually shows it's exactly 11 o'clock. So 5 minutes from now we'll be in the second block.